This podcast of To the Point is a production of KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9 FM and webcasting at kcrw.com.
From PRI, Public Radio International, and KCRW Santa Monica, this is To the Point.
Katrina and the Role of Washington. Hello again, I'm Warren Olney, and this is To the Point from Public Radio International, a daily look at the issues Americans care about most. In New Orleans, the removal of bodies is underway, and officials say the city has finally been secured. But Americans have been jolted by government failure to prevent and cope with disaster. For the first time since September 11th, they're telling pollsters domestic issues are more important than the war against terror. On To the Point, after 25 years of demanding government cutbacks, even conservative commentators are predicting a progressive resurgence. Has Katrina accomplished what the Democrats could not? Or are both parties comfortable with things as they are? On Reporter's Notebook later on, the fourth anniversary of September 11th. First, the news.
Support for To the Point comes from subscribers of KCRW Santa Monica and from the Public Radio International Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Hello again, Warren Olney, back with To the Point. In the aftermath of Katrina, Republicans are postponing new cuts in taxes and spending. On To the Point, will the failure to prevent and cope with disaster change the ways of Washington? Or are both parties happy with things as they are? On Reporter's Notebook, on the fourth anniversary of September 11th, how have subsequent events impacted public perceptions of President Bush? First, this news update. In New Orleans, officials are recovering bodies. At the same time, they're trying to coax reluctant residents to abandon their homes. Here's the city attorney, Sherry Landry.
The city is now fully secured. 14,000 troops are in Orleans Parish at present. They are actively patrolling all areas of the city and are even running nightly reconnaissance missions on air and ground to prevent further looting.
Again, Sherry Landry is the city attorney of New Orleans. Tim Dwyer is a reporter with the Washington Post. He speaks to us from New Orleans. Tim, 14,000 troops in New Orleans. I understand you are now poised to go out with some of them. Tell us about what you're doing.
I'm just about to leave on a mission with the National Guard from Oregon. They're going out to actually do some reconnaissance for infrastructure or streets to see what streets are passable, what streets are not, so they can start getting into the neighborhoods that were flooded where the water's beginning to recede.
You've been out there a lot, I know. We talked to you yesterday about it. Today, the city attorney said, among other things, that there's so much broken glass on the streets that anybody who tried to get into the city in a vehicle might have a real problem with a flat tire. She said that emergency vehicles have had that problem as well. Have you noticed that?
There's a lot of debris all over the city, and particularly down in the downtown area where, you know, glass blew out of a lot of the buildings. There's glass all over the streets. And I think some of it's sort of been brushed aside by all the emergency vehicles, just driving over it. The wind sort of brushed it aside. But there's still tons of debris and low-hanging wires, and you really have to be careful when you're driving not to hit a wire or run over something that's going to leave you stranded.
What about these thousands of people who still say that they don't want to leave? Do you think they will be reassured by the city attorney's statement that the city has now been secured, that 14,000 troops are going to be able to protect their property?
I think if they heard her, they would. I'm not sure how many of them are sitting in their flooded homes, you know, watching TV or listening to the radio. I know it comes down to just, you know, person on person, the person who knocks on their door, convincing them that they'll be safe and that things have changed in the last 4 or 5 days. But the New Orleans people are stubborn people. They like where they live, and I think now we're getting down to the last few who don't want to leave, and it's going to be more of a war of words than anything else.
You told us yesterday that there were stories about the National Guard, federal marshals actually ordering people to leave the city. Has there been any further evidence of them or anybody else trying to force evacuations?
I haven't seen that. And as a matter of fact, shortly after I talked to you, I went to another neighborhood which wasn't flooded at all, and I met a family, a couple with four children who were staying there, and the husband and wife were sitting out on beach chairs on a sidewalk in front of their house and enjoying cold beverages, water, and a Louisiana state trooper stopped and asked them if they needed diapers for their children. So they weren't being forced to evacuate. So I think it depends on where you are and what kind of neighborhood it is.
What about the National Guardsmen that you're with? You said they're from Oregon. Have you had a chance to talk to any of them about how they feel about this mission? What else they've been up to in the past few days?
I've had a chance to talk to a few of them. I was just talking to a young fellow who was in his on his honeymoon in Hawaii, and it's just came from Hawaii to here. For many of them, it's their first time here, and of course, the weather is so different here than it is in Oregon. But you know, they're happy to be here. They're happy to help. They're very dedicated, and they're working very, very hard.
Again, we're talking with Tim Dwyer of the Washington Post. When it's as unclear as it is what different agencies are doing, the difference between the National Guard, the Highway Patrol, the reports that you had yesterday about the federal marshals, that raises questions about who's in charge. There's an announcement today that the director of FEMA, Michael Brown, is going to be removed from the role of managing things on the ground and replaced by the Vice Admiral of the Coast Guard, Thad Allen. Do you think that that will make a difference to the people who are trying to deal and with that situation there? Will there be a greater sense, do you think, of there being somebody in charge?
I think so. I mean, I think I told you last time I talked to you that I lived here for a while, and you know, deep Louisiana sort of have an inherent distrust of the federal government, and they're not happy with FEMA, and even you know the suggestion by FEMA not to photograph the bodies being removed. I was talking to one longtime resident yesterday, and he said, you know, FEMA doesn't have to protect us from bad things in our lives. We know that hurricanes kill people, and they don't have to protect us from it, and we resent that they do that.
The explanation for that, though, which comes apparently is in addition to FEMA from local authorities, is they don't want somebody in Houston to be looking at television and seeing their house evacuated with the people bringing bodies out. So there is, I gather, a privacy and sensitivity issue as well.
Absolutely. I think it's up to the media to have that kind of sensitivity and you know, when they're doing their job. And I think we have done that. But I'm just the people I've talked to here, I think it's just that sentiment sort of, you know, represents their view towards FEMA, that they're just distrustful of it. And it feels like kind of a big brother thing.
All right. Well, Tim Dwyer, once again, thank you so much for being with us today.
Okay, thank you.
Reporter for the Washington Post, about to go out with the National Guard from Oregon to patrol the city of New Orleans. In a moment, to Katrina and the role of government on To the Point.
To the Point thanks Factiva, a Dow Jones and Reuters company, for its use of Factiva.com. With news and information from 8,000 global sources, Factiva is a resource for companies whose continued success rests upon timely strategic news on their industry, competitors, and themselves.
Norman, only back with To the Point. Joseph Albaugh, President Bush's first director of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, told the Senate during his confirmation hearings that disaster aid was an oversized entitlement program. FEMA was downsized and absorbed into the Department of Homeland Security. Now Republicans in Congress have delayed additional cuts in federal spending, and they've also postponed new tax cuts as well. Jonathan Weissman reports for The Washington Post. Jonathan, thanks a lot for being with us.
Happy to be here.
Big contrast between what we heard some years ago from Joseph Albaugh and what the Republicans are doing now. Do you think this represents a change in attitude on the part of the majority party, or rather a specific response to a temporary situation?
I think it's more probably the latter, but we really haven't seen it yet. The fact is that most Republicans on the Hill still believe that a repeal of the estate tax should go forward, that the tax cuts and the spending cuts that were planned for this fall should go forward. But on the margins, there are Republicans, especially Republican moderates, who are looking at the changed circumstances after Katrina and are very unhappy about the agenda, and that is why the agenda is right now on hold. Basically, they are going to be the Republican leadership will be watching to see if the erosion is serious enough to actually prevent any of these things from actually passing. And it's not that you will see bills defeated to cut taxes or to cut spending. You may just never see those bills ever reach the floor of the House of Representatives or the Senate.
So there could then be a major change in the way the Congress has been moving, whether it's the desire of the leadership or otherwise.
That's right. This was before Katrina, the agenda for this fall in Congress was kind of a small government Republicans' dream. The major items were going to be the permanent repeal of the estate tax, another round of tax cuts, the first round of entitlement spending cuts since 1997, and, you know, hope against hope, they were also going to try to push for President Bush's efforts to add personal and private investment accounts to Social Security. Now, every one of those agenda items is on hold and in real jeopardy.
So is this, do you think, this situation likely to continue? What might get the agenda back on track?
Well, I think it would get back on track if this was the last of the supplementals. Remember, Congress has already passed two different supplemental emergency appropriations for Katrina. It's now up to $62 billion. The administration has said that this is only the beginning, that many more will come, at least one more will come, and members of Congress are saying they're expecting the cost to go up to $150, $200 billion. If that keeps happening, I find it hard to believe that they're ever going to be able to get back on track because they're going to be continually dealing with Katrina issues. But if things turn out to be not as bad as expected and Katrina can kind of fade from the Washington headlines, then they would gladly take up the agenda and get back to what they'd hoped to do this fall.
What about the White House? You're focused, of course, on the Congress, but has the Bush administration had much to say at this point about that agenda, or are they so preoccupied with what's happening with Katrina that they haven't had time to deal with it?
They've been pretty quiet. I think the administration has said that they would still like to see the Social Security pass. But as far as the tax cuts and the spending cuts, they haven't said much at all. And to be honest, I mean, most of the biggest tax cuts that they want made permanent don't come due to be extended for a while. The first major Bush tax cut that would be set to expire is the cut in capital gains and dividends, and that's in 2008. So they can wait if they wanted to, but there was a sense in Congress that this was the best that you had to strike while the iron was hot. And before Katrina, the iron was hot.
Bottom line, then, from what you have told us, is this, that the dream agenda of those who want a smaller government has been derailed by Katrina. Tax cuts and further reductions in spending may never get back on track if, in fact, Katrina appears to be as bad as the worst fears, and which could cost the government $150 to $200 billion.
That's right. The Republican agenda for the fall is going to be just another victim of Hurricane Katrina.
Jonathan Weissman, economic policy reporter for The Washington Post. Stephen Moore was formerly with the Cato Institute, libertarian organization, was with the Club for Growth. He's now senior economic writer for The Wall Street Journal and author of Government, America's Number One Growth Industry. Stephen Moore, welcome to our program.
Hello, Warren.
You're certainly one of those, as the title of your book would suggest, that wants to see a smaller government rather than a bigger one. What do you think is going on on Capitol Hill, and are the Republicans going to be able to maintain the agenda eventually?
Well, I think it's a spendthrift that's going on, and I think you're seeing Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill trying to make the case that this isn't a time for large expansions in government, not just for spending on Katrina, but other social services, et cetera, which I find to be kind of an unreasonable response to this, because if you really look at what happened in response to Katrina, it was a breakdown at government at the local, state, and federal levels. And why should we then say, well, what we need is much more federal spending?
Interesting. In the Philadelphia Inquirer, there is a reprise of what Joseph Albaugh, the first director of FEMA, said during his confirmation hearing at the Senate, which was that federal disaster aid is an oversized entitlement program. He said that expectations of what the federal government when the federal government should be involved, and the degree of involvement may have ballooned beyond what is an appropriate level. And the paper goes on to say that the FEMA budget was subsequently downsized, the budget slashed, autonomy erased. We know it was absorbed into the Department of Homeland Security, and it was a prime target, again, according to the paper, for Bush conservatives. Was that a mistake?
I don't think the problem here was that budgets were cut. I think it was just government incompetence. You know, I was never in favor of creating the Department of Homeland Security in the first place because I felt all we were really doing was rearranging chairs and not really getting to the heart of the matter of how we were going to deal with catastrophes like this. I mean, another point I'd like to make related to that is that everyone's talking about spending. You mentioned the $100 billion figure. Just to put that number in context, that's about $100,000 for every person who was involved, who was displaced from Katrina. After other times in American history when cities were ruined, after the San Francisco earthquake or the Chicago fire, Atlanta, it's interesting to note historically very little federal money was put into rebuilding those cities. And of course, we know that they were all rebuilt to the marvels that they are today.
We had, of course, in the meantime, the New Deal and a different kind of approach toward the importance of the federal government. Do you think that we ought to go back to where we were before that?
Well, I certainly think that the New Deal has been a failure in a lot of ways. But I think that the idea that what we need to do now is spend a huge amount of additional money is really misguided. We've seen just in the last week incredible generosity of not just the American people, but American corporations, companies like Walmart and Home Depot really stepping up. And I'd like to see the private sector take the first steps in rebuilding New Orleans and also in helping the people whose lives have been ruined.
Stephen Moore, senior economic writer for the Wall Street Journal, author of Government, America's Number One Growth Industry. Henry Waxman is a Democratic congressman, has been in the Congress for 15 terms. He represents the 30th District in Los Angeles, and he's the ranking member of the Government Reform Committee. Congressman, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Pleased to be with you.
Conservative commentator David Brooks, writing in the New York Times, says he believes that as a result of what's happened with regard to Katrina, there will be what he refers to as a progressive resurgence. Do you think that's what will happen?
There may well be a progressive resurgence, but there's certainly, after this national embarrassment and shame of the response to last week's hurricane, a sense by the American people that we need government to be there. Individuals who have money can fend for themselves, but no individual is going to be wealthy enough to fend for himself or herself if you have a natural disaster like a hurricane. You need government response at the state and local as well as the federal level. You need to act in concert with others. There's a public responsibility. And defense of our country is one of the most important of all public responsibilities. That's why we have government. I think it's not just limited to that, but I don't even think the real strong conservatives would deny you don't expect a local area to go to war. You expect, if it's needed, our country goes to war, and we need to protect all American citizens. So I think that, as David Brooks pointed out in his article, the age of Ronald Reagan, where people thought we needed to shrink government, people are rethinking that, and I think that not we need to expand government particularly, but we need to spend money on functions that we all must have, and we need to spend it effectively. I find it ironic to hear this discussion of small government versus big government. We haven't had under Republicans any shrinking of government. If you look at the kind of pork that has exploded under the Republican Congress, we've never seen anything like it. We have huge deficits, but we're throwing money at the oil companies, pet projects, and the highway bill, and the defense bill has all these special projects as well. So it's hard to even for me to even accept the idea. Maybe Mr. Moore is sincere about it, but I don't think he can think that the Republicans in control of the Congress believe in small government. They believe in big government to reward their friends.
Before I go back to Mr. Moore, what about his point that if we spend $100 billion with regard to Katrina, that's $100,000 for each of the people who was displaced, according to him. Is that an appropriate amount to spend?
Well, we don't know what the appropriate amount to spend, but I don't think you're apportioning it out per individual. You're talking about the basis for a restoration of what has been one of the great cities in this country and that whole region that's been so devastated. We've got to do what we can to help the people, and even President Bush and the Republicans are agreeing with that point, we have a responsibility. We failed our first responsibility to do what we could to mitigate the disaster, to respond to it appropriately. Whatever money we spend, we've got to make sure that we're spending it wisely. We've got to be sure that it's not going to cronies, political cronies, to run these agencies who then whatever money they're given, they don't know what to do with it because they're only in there as payoffs for loyalty to the Republican Party.
Congressman Henry Waxman, Democrat from Los Angeles. Back to Stephen Moore with the Wall Street Journal. What about the need for government, as Congressman Waxman defines it, especially for what he refers to as defense of the country? I guess you could say that's what happens when a hurricane attacks. And what about public responsibility? Is it time to reassess those things?
Well, I agree with some of the things that Congressman Waxman was saying. I agree that the Republicans have, under George Bush, built up government again. We've seen an enormous amount of pork barrel spending. He is exactly right about that. The highway bill that we just passed is a good example of money that's not going for infrastructure, but a lot of pork barrel projects. Now, I would say that's happening on both sides of the aisle. In fact, there was a front page story in the Washington Post yesterday about how Mary Landrieu, a Democrat, diverted a lot of the funds that were supposed to go to things like beefing up the levees there for pork barrel projects that she wanted funding. So there's a lot of blame to go around. But I would just go back to this point that we've seen on a grand scale in the last week, perhaps more so than any other time in American history, the complete incompetence of government at every level, from the local level, which in New Orleans, which has traditionally been one of the most politically corrupt cities in the country. We saw reports of even the police looting some of the stores there to give you an indication of how bad things were. And I just don't conclude from this incompetence of government that therefore we need to spend so much more. One last point to just think about is that with $50 billion already being allocated, and Henry Waxman and I both agree that we don't want to see that money wasted, it's hard not to waste that kind of money when you're spending that huge amount of money so rapidly. You know, one of the problems with Washington is we can't tell the difference between a million and $1 billion. $50 billion is an awesome amount of money, and I hate to tell your audience this, but I'm afraid a lot of that money will be misspent.
What about the fact that the Army Corps of Engineers asked for $14 billion to fix up the levees in the Mississippi River and had been asking for it for some length of time? That request was pretty much ignored, whether it was by Mary Landrieu or the Bush administration or anybody else. Would it have made better sense, Stephen Moore, to spend that money after all and then not have to spend the $50 or $100 billion that may be allocated now?
Oh, of course, you're right. I don't think anybody disagrees with that, Warren. I think the whole appropriations process has really broken down, where you have, again, pork barrel spending going on by Republicans and Democrats. And the highway bill is a good example, where money is being diverted from high-priority infrastructure construction projects to sort of pet projects to get election, get politicians reelected. And so we need to really revisit the whole process. One last point I'd like to make, Warren, if I might. We haven't mentioned the word private sector at all in this discussion. And yes, government plays a role, but when we're talking about the rebuilding of much of the private property and buildings and private businesses there, a lot of that responsibility goes to the private sector. And let's not have the government come in first. Let's have the government be sort of covering the areas the private sector cannot.
Stephen Moore with the Wall Street Journal, author of Government, America's Number One Growth Industry. We'll be back with him, with Congressman Henry Waxman, and others, and continue this conversation after a brief break. And on Reporter's Notebook, we'll talk about the fourth anniversary of September 11th. What about the perceptions of President Bush? Back in a moment with To the Point from PRI.
Transcripts of To the Point are available from the Transcription Company, 818-848-6500, or on the web at transcripts.net. A CD copy of To the Point is available by calling 1-800-600-5279.
Well, we're only back with To the Point. Talk today about the role of government in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Is it time for a rethinking of the effort to reduce the size of government by both tax and spending reductions? Again, Congressman Henry Waxman is a Democrat from Los Angeles in his 15th term, ranking member of the Government Reform Committee. Congressman, what about what Stephen Moore said about the incompetence of government at all levels? And why wouldn't it be better, as he suggests, to get the private sector in first to deal with the rebuilding and reconstruction rather than having government go in?
The I disagree with the assumption that whatever government does is incompetent. If you look at FEMA, which is the topic we're discussing, this was a very highly regarded agency of government. When we had our earthquake in Los Angeles, FEMA moved in immediately to help people and helped the economy of Los Angeles and California get back on its feet. Government has an important role to play, and when you recognize that an organization like FEMA had not just budget cuts, but it was put into the Department of Homeland Security. It was confused whether it was a counter-terrorist organization or supposed to be one responding to natural disasters. It looked like, if, as a result of what we saw their experience to be, that they're not capable of doing either one. And many people are asking, what, at least we had some warning on Hurricane Katrina. What do we do if there's a terrorist attack without any warning? FEMA can do the job. We've seen it in the past. But you can't have such a low regard for government that you just put in political cronies to run it. And then I think they're going to do a good job. You need professionals. People know what they're doing. Now, as far as the private sector is concerned, of course the private sector is going to take the lead role. A lot of what FEMA does, and when you declare an area a disaster area, is to extend loans to people so they could go out and hire private contractors to help them rebuild. We're talking about people who are really flat on their back right now. They can't go out and borrow money. They can't make the payments for their loans. If they get sick, they don't have health insurance, they're in trouble, especially when their health insurance is tied to their job. So we're talking about people who need help. Now, as far as wasting money, Stephen Moore and I think, agree on this topic. And one of the things I was offended by and raised it when we did the appropriations bill is that Congress went out of its way to weaken provisions that protect taxpayers. They passed an increase on the limit a federal employee can purchase with a government-issued credit card from $15,000 to $250,000 per transaction. We've seen in the past that many abuses have occurred with these credit cards, and this new provision puts billions of dollars at risk. We ought to be sensible about how we're spending money, not wasting it, and government can be effective if we are watchdogs over making sure that there's no government waste.
All right. You and Stephen Moore agree with regard to waste. Do you agree with regard to pork barrel spending, which was a province of both parties, as he indicated, and as I think you agreed as well? And you yourself said you don't necessarily want government to get bigger, but rather to get it better. Do the Democrats offer a real alternative to what the Bush administration is doing?
Yeah, and first of all, I don't think it's fair to say, well, both parties are involved in pork barreling. This is a Republican-led Congress with a Republican administration. When Bush came into office, we had a $5 trillion projected surplus. Now we have a $5 trillion that's turned into a $3 trillion of new deficits, and that's not even counting what we're going to spend in Iraq, Louisiana, or repeal of the estate tax, which, by the way, if you look at the moral questions, to go now to the agenda that the Republicans had of repealing the estate tax permanently for people who make over $2 or $3 million, have $2 or $3 million in assets, and at the same time cut health care programs like Medicaid, where 40% of the babies are born in Medicaid, 2/3 of the seniors in nursing homes are paid by Medicaid, 90% of children with AIDS or HIV are being helped by Medicaid. To cut that safety net program, that really raises the moral questions of what are our priorities.
Again, Congressman Henry Waxman, Democrat from Los Angeles. If Stephen Moore is to the right of Congressman Waxman, our next guest, Mika Sifri, is to the left. He is a freelance writer. He edits a website called Personal Democracy Forum, devoted to how technology is changing policy. Also has a blog at mika.sifri.com. Mika Sifri, welcome to you.
Good to be here, Warren.
If you are, as I indicated, a person of the left, what do you say to what the congressman just said about the differences between the parties? And do you think that there is, as David Brooks put it, conservative columnist for the New York Times, that there's likely to be a progressive resurgence and that it'll be led by the Democratic Party?
Well, I wish it were so, but that doesn't make it happen. And I think the problem is that they're really good reasons to distrust the Democrats, or at least the Democrats that are incumbents today, to do the right thing. I think they have become as addicted to pork and as beholden to special interests as the Republicans. I mean, just to take as an example, this highway bill that Congressman Waxman, who, by the way, I should say I admire him, and I think he's done some great things on issues, especially around health care and tobacco. But on that highway bill, which was jammed with more than 6,000 individual pork projects, according to Taxpayers for Common Sense, which short shrifted the spending that the Army Corps wanted for the levies and pumped money into ridiculous things like $250 million for a bridge to nowhere in Alaska, Congressman Waxman was one of 412 members of Congress who voted for that bill. I'd like actually to hear why he voted for it if he thought it was such a terrible bill filled with so much pork. See, the problem we have today is that we've got kind of a one-and-a-half party system in America. You've got the Republicans in power and all the money flowing to them, and then you've got incumbent Democrats, many of whom are really safe. They don't get challengers, even in their own party, and instead of doing the right thing, they're just very happy to bring home $2 million here and $4 million there of taxpayer money and brag about how, you know, they got the spending for this program in their district or that one. It helps keep them in power, but our problem is that the process is broken. And if we're going to fix things, you know, I agree, it's not about big government or smaller government. It's about effective government. How do we get Congress to prioritize the real risks that we face? Instead, they seem to just, you know, vote huge slabs of money willy-nilly. This $50 billion, it's shocking. It just went through the House without a formal reading. Nobody knows what's in that legislation other than Denny Hastert and Tom DeLay. And, you know, it just boggles the mind that they let this stuff happen.
Denny Hastert, the Speaker, of course, Tom DeLay, the Majority Leader from Congress. Let me go back to Henry Waxman. You're certainly in a safe seat in Los Angeles. You haven't had a very significant challenge for a long time. You've been there for 30 years. Why did you vote for the highway bill?
I agree with what he said about that highway bill. And I would have liked to have voted to take out a lot of that pork barrel spending. But the Republicans are the ones who design what votes were even allowed. And all we were permitted was an up or down vote on the whole piece of legislation. Now, that piece of legislation had the whole funding for the infrastructure needs of this country. There was a lot of pork barrel spending, but that wasn't enough for me to vote against the appropriations that we needed in this nation for rapid transit, for highways, for bridges, for dams, for all the things that we must have if our country is going to be able to function. I think the essential point is that the way the Republicans have run things is that they protect that pork barrel spending. It seems to me a little too glib to say, oh, people in both parties do it, and therefore they're all no good. It's the Ralph Nader argument in 2000. There's no difference between Bush and Gore, and so you should just throw your vote away and help Bush get elected. Well, there is a big difference between way President Bush is acted as president of the United States than what Al Gore would have done as president, or John Kerry would have done as president, or what the Democrats would do if we were in control. And I hope that we would have a progressive surge in this country to recognize that we need not only to protect our security, but to give people opportunities. Government must be there to make sure that we have a safety net, we have educational opportunities, and that we're training people to take an appropriate role and to go as far as they possibly can go to realize their self-worth in a society that will give them all the opportunities to do that.
California Democrat Henry Waxman, back to Mika Sifri. So what about it? He says that he voted for the highway bill because there was the infrastructure for the whole country. He couldn't vote to on individual pork barrel projects because the Republicans in control of the rules wouldn't allow it.
Well, I sympathize with somebody who's in the member of the minority of the House of Representatives today. It's true that it's run more and more like a one-party regime there. But the question is, when will Democrats wake up and realize that they have to change these rules? And I don't mean by changing the rules inside that clubby atmosphere of the House of Representatives, but going outside it, going directly to the people. I mean, this is a moment, I think, where you could go and you could say, we need to radically change how government behaves. And the question is, will people trust the Democrats to do that? And my point about the vote for the highway bill, and it's just one small example, is that we watch our representatives in Washington going along and coming up with reasons time and again to, you know, kind of muddle through. And then it's only when a disaster hits that they show a tiny bit of spine. And Ken, when Election Day comes around a year from now, do you think people are going to punish Republicans and reward Democrats for this? Well, I think for starters, they may be inclined to punish the Republicans. But if the Democrats don't come forward with a really different way of doing things that demonstrates to the public that they can be trusted with the purse again. Remember, the last time the Democrats were in the majority in Congress, we had just as much pork barrel politics under them. People are justifiably skeptical of both parties. And I'm not saying this is a Ralph Nader argument at all. I actually think this is a moment for an independent to come up through the middle, not somebody on the left. Like I said, people, it's not about bigger government or more handouts or more welfare. It's actually about effective government. I would also say one of the lessons of the response to the hurricane is it's about empowering individuals and small groups and nonprofit organizations who can take action quicker than any bureaucracy. You look at what people are doing today to self-organize, how they're using the internet, for example, to pool information on, who can donate housing, helping survivors reunite their families. What we're seeing is that people linking together can move a lot faster than any bureaucracy, and I'd like to see somebody come along and say, let's reinvent government to enable that process to happen more.
I'm going to break in on you because I need to introduce another guest before we run out of time here. We've been talking with Mika Sifri, freelance writer, also edits a Personal Democracy Forum, a website, and has his own blog at mika.sifri.com. We'll try to get back to you if I can and to our other guests as well. But I want to introduce Professor Kenneth Warren. He's a political science professor at St. Louis University, president of the Warren Poll, which conducts polling for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, among others. Professor Warren, thanks very much for joining us.
Glad to be with you.
You have studied the kind of debate that we are hearing about what the role and function of government ought to be, how big it ought to be, how much support it deserves, whether one party or another is entitled to the trust of the people for a long, long time. We've just heard this phrase, reinvent government again, coming from Mika Sifri. Do you think that the situation in as a result of Katrina has the capacity to influence the argument one way or the other?
Well, it does, and the argument would be the same argument. Ever since the late 1800s, when the American people were upset with the railroads, particularly the farmers being ripped off by excessive fees, the government stepped in and offered to resolve the problem, and creating the Interstate Commerce Commission. With every problem that we've had, most of them not being able to be resolved locally at the state level, or the local level, the federal government has been all too willing to step in, increase the size of government. I'm not saying that's bad, but the trend, whether it's been the responding to the railroads, responding to monopolies, and the federal government stepping in during Teddy Roosevelt's administration with all sorts of antitrust legislation, or Woodrow Wilson, who wanted to increase the size of government to create a Pure Food and Drug Administration to regulate bad food, all the way up through the Roosevelt administration, providing a social safety net. Every time we've had a crisis, whether it's 9/11, create Homeland Security and nationalize security through doing that. The trend has been toward making the federal government bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Why would that happen in the aftermath of Katrina if, as one of our earlier guests, Stephen Moore, the libertarian writing for the Wall Street Journal, said, if what we saw over the past week was incompetence at government, on the part of government, rather, at all levels, and of course it's been focused particularly on FEMA and the federal government?
That's right, but that doesn't mean that the American people do not think that the response would be more appropriate at the federal level. It's just that they would have to give a better response. This bad response may be an anomaly. It may not be an anomaly, but Warren, there's no question that that the national government is the only government in our federal bureaucracy that has the resources to respond to a catastrophe like that.
You, of course, are a pollster yourself, Kenneth Warren at St. Louis University, president of the Warren Poll. We have a new poll by the Pew Center for the Public and the Press saying that for the first time since the September 11th terror attacks, a majority of Americans, 56%, say it's more important for the president to focus on domestic policy than the war on terrorism. Is that consistent with your own findings?
Well, yes, it is. Americans are getting more and more upset. In the state of Missouri, they're getting more and more upset with the loss of jobs, the price of gasoline, and their ability to pay their bills at the end of every month, as all of us are concerned with this. And the war on Iraq seems more and more distant and distant to Americans. And so, naturally, with this now this Katrina disaster, that the American people are thinking, they're putting Iraq more in perspective, spending $200 billion to $300 billion counting in Iraq. They're now thinking that, well, you know, maybe more money should have been devoted for preparing for Hurricane Katrina. Maybe the $14 billion asked by the Army Corps of Engineers for revamping the levee system in New Orleans to withstand a Class 4 and 5 hurricanes would have been more appropriate than now spending $100 billion trying to rebuild New Orleans.
Do you think, we heard this argument a moment ago about whether people have any trust in either of the political parties, is this a moment when, as Mika Sifri suggested, an independent might arise, somebody out of the middle, to try to argue on behalf of this reinvention of government, not necessarily making it bigger or smaller, but rather making it more effective?
Well, yes and no. The problem is that realistically, there's no way that a third-party candidate can win in our system. The rules are stacked way, way against the third-party candidate. I mean, you look at what Ross Perot did, and Ross Perot won zero electoral votes, 19% of the popular vote. But still, I teach presidential elections, and this is a textbook question. And the textbook answer is always no way until the rules are changed to allow a third-party candidate a fair chance in winning the 270 electoral votes.
All right. So the debate will go on, pretty much familiar to what we have seen in the distant past and the recent past. We'll, of course, be keeping track of it. And thanks to all of you for a very interesting program today, Professor Kenneth Warren at St. Louis University, Mika Sifri, our freelance writer, Congressman Henry Waxman, Democrat from Los Angeles, Stephen Moore with The Wall Street Journal, and our earlier reporter, Jonathan Weissman, economic policy writer for The Washington Post. For the first time since the attacks on New York and Washington, a majority of Americans say the president should focus more on domestic policy than the war on terror. Once again, that's the latest finding of the Pew Center for the People and the Press, and it comes just 2 days before the fourth anniversary of September 11th. So what does it mean for the Bush presidency? We'll talk about that in a moment on To the Point.
You can find more information on the program, including archived editions, at www.moretothepoint.com. More to the point, all one word, .com.
Werman Alney back with Reporter's Notebook on To the Point. On this coming Sunday, September 11th, the Defense Department has organized what it calls a freedom walk from the Pentagon to the Washington Mall, a memorial to those who died 4 years ago. Today, President Bush observed the occasion in advance.
In one way our nation can honor their sacrifice is to win the war on terror. September 11, 2001, we saw the future the terrorists intend for us, and I made a decision. America will not wait to be attacked again. We will take the fight to the enemy, and we will defend our freedom.
The president is speaking today in advance of September 11th. David Sanger is White House correspondent for The New York Times. David, always good to have you with us. Is it instructive to compare the way that the president responded to September 11th and the way he's responded to Katrina?
Well, it's instructive. I'm not quite sure how illuminating it is, given the fact that while the only two things that they have in common is that they are crises that have captured the nation and brought about great devastation. But in the case of September 11th, there was a clear enemy, a cause here, and the president was able to use the 10 days after that to to rally the nation to confront the immediate cause. And I think you can argue that probably the finest moments of his presidency, or at least those in which he was most able to unify the country, came in those 10 days that led up to his address in front of Congress, and then ultimately the invasion of Afghanistan. In this case, obviously, there's no enemy. It's a natural disaster. And that means that the discussion turns much more back to the competence of the immediate response, whether or not you could have prevented it, even to a degree greater than those questions were asked later on about September 11th. And it comes in a very different context when the country is more divided on partisan lines, when the war in Iraq has led to a debate about whether or not that was, in fact, a natural outflow from the war on terrorism or not, and at a moment when the president's own ratings are significantly down, and people have a lot of questions about whether we are spending the kind of resources that we need at home in a war in Iraq that's obviously more complex and more expensive than we had anticipated.
So what then about the anniversary, and it's a celebration this coming weekend, will it tend, do you think, to focus attention in a way that the White House wishes it wouldn't on Iraq and on whether or not it or how much it really had to do with September 11th?
You know, I'm not sure that that will happen, Warren, only because the after effects of Katrina have so dominated the news that you haven't read much, at least on the front pages, about Iraq in the past 10, 12 days. I mean, think in the time period leading up to this in August, we were intently focused on how the war in Iraq was going. And even the Tuesday after Katrina, just right after the levees broke, I was in the White House in an interview with a very senior official, and we were discussing president's agenda for the month of September. And at that time, of course, the city wasn't flooded yet. And he said, well, this is all going to be about getting John Roberts through the Supreme Court. And it's going to be all about managing to get people to understand how the war on terror in Iraq all worked together seamlessly. And the president, in fact, was supposed to give a speech next Monday. It's been canceled just before he goes to the U.N. For the 2 days of opening there and the poverty summit. He will now still go to New York, but really for just a fairly brief period of time.
So this really then has drastically changed the agenda for the White House. What about Social Security reform and the other kinds of things that he's talked about that he said he would spend political capital on after he was reelected?
Nary a word about them in recent times. And I think the bigger effect is that we've now had an accumulation of extraordinarily expensive events that have are going to have some medium-term impact on the deficit. You've had, of course, the recovery from 9/11. You've had Katrina. You've had the war in Iraq, which is obviously not cheap. You've had an increase now in gasoline prices that could slow down the economy. Unclear whether that's going to happen, but it would be a reasonable suspicion that it might. And all these things added together make the president's projection of cutting the deficit in half by 2007-2008 to be a difficult goal to reach. And the Social Security program that he was suggestion that he was making, and his whole thoughts about overhaul, you can argue about whether it would work or would not, but nobody argues the fact that it would be expensive in the opening years, and I think that's going to make it a harder sell.
Will the observance of September 11th this coming weekend be a way for the president to accomplish some damage control and try to change the focus of the country, or do you think Katrina is just so overwhelming he can't do that?
He can try, but look what his Sunday is going to be like. He's going to obviously make comments in the morning on the September 11th anniversary, but then he's immediately flying off to the region to be down with the hurricane recovery effort. And, you know, my guess is that by the end of the day, that will probably drown out a good deal of his September 11th message.
They've announced today that Michael Brown is going to be replaced as the guy on the scene for FEMA, the man who is director of FEMA, by a Coast Guard vice admiral. Do you think that's going to help the president in terms of the perception of leadership and the concern about people that somebody's got to be in charge?
It may. And, you know, I've sat through a number of these White House briefings in the past three or four days when you've heard the White House and the White House spokesman defend Mike Brown very vociferously, argue that the president has as much confidence in him as he expressed last week, and basically trying to shake off our suggestion that, in fact, something like this might take place. And so I find it interesting. It reminds me a little bit of what happened in the opening month of the reconstruction effort in Iraq, when you may recall that there was one person sent out to be the reconstruction czar, and he was gently moved aside when Negroponte and others came in.
David Sanger, it was always good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
White House correspondent for the New York Times. Producers of To the Point, Christian Bordahl, Francis Anderton, Katie Cooper, Ileana Justice, Jonah King, and Sharon Rembaum. I'm Warren Olney. Join us again for To the Point, produced live as a co-production of KCRW Santa Monica and PRI.
Public Radio International.